Sunday, April the 27th.
Welcome to this Burlington Audio Podcast. We hope you will be encouraged and inspired in your faith as you listen to this message. We'd love to hear what you think. Please be in touch with us through the website. More information and many more podcasts are all at burlingtonbaptist.org.uk. Thanks for listening.
I was saying something about Pentecost. So Vasco is a mate of ours. He's the guy that we work with in and support in Thailand, working with leaders across South Asia, and we're looking forward to welcoming him on Easter Sunday. So we're going to go through the kind of events and moments that happen with Jesus right from Resurrection Sunday all the way to Ascension, when Jesus cleared out of here, and the coming of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost. So we're on the evening of Resurrection Sunday. That's where we pick up our story. No idea why the screen keeps going on and off, and the sound doesn't work, and it's all falling apart, isn't it? See what I mean by low Sunday? The disciples, where are they? Where do we find them? We find themselves kind of locked away at the beginning of this story. They're terrified. Not only is there bolts on the doors, but they're kind of locks on their hearts. They've been through perhaps a trauma that's hard for us to envisage, hard for us to imagine. Not only had they put, like Mary had last week, their hopes in Jesus, but they had seen him die in a most awful and excruciating way. And they're paralyzed. They find themselves on that first Resurrection Sunday in a place where we too often find ourselves. And that's the gap between reality and our experience. The gap between reality and experience. You see, their experience is that they're afraid. They think their future is over. They feel hopeless. They feel like they've failed. They feel like they've been made mugs of. They've trusted this Galilean preacher and it's all ended up in disaster. That's their experience. But the reality is that Jesus was alive. You could have responded in some way. The reality of that Easter Sunday is that Jesus is alive. There is hope for the future. Their sins have been forgiven. They can be assured of eternal life. And yet they feel afraid and broken and hopeless. There is this huge gap between their reality over here, where it all feels like it's falling apart, and what Jesus has done in coming out of the tomb. This is a story for everybody who becomes aware of that gap. And I think all of us have been in situations in our lives when we've been aware of the gap between the reality and our experience. We know that gap. The problem with the gap is that we know that there shouldn't be one. So we know that we shouldn't be fearful. We know that we shouldn't feel hopeless. We know that we shouldn't be wallowing in despair. We know that we shouldn't be disappointed. We know that we shouldn't be hiding away. And yet that's often where we find ourselves. And because we know we shouldn't do it, what do? When we do something we know we shouldn't be doing, we hide. We hide. And that's where the disciples are right now. They're hiding. There's this reality experience gap, and they're hiding away. They're hiding from their fears. They're hiding from their disappointments. They're hiding from what other people might say. They're hiding from their own sense of what on earth happened over these 3 years. You sometimes hide. Do you sometimes hide? Our instant response might be that we're not hiding. Hey, look, I'm here. Hello. I'm brave enough to come out on a post-Easter Sunday. But what feelings do you have that you're glad the person next to you doesn't know about? What are the behaviours that you're with equal gladness that other people sitting around you aren't aware of? What are the doubts that sometimes you feel that you'd be super nervous about sharing? We all find ourselves hiding. The first response of Adam and Eve, as we heard some weeks ago, was to hide. And there's a real sense in which we've been hiding ever since. So here we go. The risen Jesus offers his presence for our hiding. For our hiding. We can't lock him out. We can choose to ignore him, but we can't lock him out. His presence came into their situation. And just as we ended last week, Mary ultimately wasn't transformed, was she, because of some theological proposition. Jesus was transformed because of his presence. It wasn't that she suddenly got all the answers, but what made a difference was his arrival. And we are facing an experiential problem. Our reality, our experience, is not the true reality. This is the resurrection. This is our hopelessness and our despair. It's an experience problem, so we need an experiential solution. And what we tend to go for when we're over here is to try and answer it in a theoretical way. But what we're facing when we're in despair and disillusionment and trauma and hurt and failure and disappointment and sin and guilt and shame is an experience, and we will need ultimately an experiential answer. And it's all too easy, because it's been our vibe and it's been our history in church life and so on, is that when we're over here and I'm feeling fearful or I'm feeling sinful or I'm feeling I lack assurance or I'm feeling despairing, is to get a intellectual or theoretical answer rather than experiential one. So we will reach for the podcast that says four ways to deal with your trauma, or four things to know about your fear, or these are things that are true in your grief. It's not that any of those things are wrong, but often they don't reach us where we need them to reach us. And what the resurrection reminds us all of the time is that it's his presence that meets us in the places where ultimately we need to be met. We crave knowledge, but we are taught to crave his presence. One of the strategies of the enemy, I think, is to have made us, particularly in the West, to be very theoretical in our faith, to know a lot about God and spend less time getting to actually know God, if you can understand the difference. And we talk about it from time to time. The Exodus, what kept them going through the wilderness after Moses had gone up the mountain, they basically said, God, if your presence doesn't go with us, we're stuffed. If we don't experience you on a daily basis, there's no hope for us. We can't spend the whole wilderness journey thinking back to what you did do, reminding ourselves of the miracles of the Exodus and the plagues and the crossing of the Red Sea. That's all about yesterday. We need your presence with us now, today. And so there's this a tendency, I think, that we carry to crave more knowledge when what we need is more experience. David said, as the deer pants for the water, so my soul, what? Longs after you. As the deer pants for the water, so I long not for more knowledge about you, but I long for you. There was a sense in which at every turn through the scriptures, we're encouraged to move not to stop with knowledge, but to move way past that into a living, real experience. The best example, I think, of that is the Apostle Paul, who it would seem had the brain the size of New York. And he'd done everything. He'd done all the studies. He was top of the class. He was, you know, he ticked this box. He had his wall full of certificates and stuff. And basically, when he wrote to the church in Philippi, he says, I've got all this stuff. These are all my credentials. And he listed his CV. You can read about it in Philippians chapter 3. And then he said, to be honest, all of that counts for nothing. What I need to do is to know you. That's what I need. Everything else counts for nothing. What I need is to know you. I crave an experience to know you, he says, Philippians 3 verse 10, and the power of the resurrection. And then, of course, Jesus, in some uncomfortable verses, said exactly the same thing. He said, many people will come and they'll say, Jesus, do you remember how much I served at that church for you? Jesus, do you remember all the things I did in your name? Jesus, do you remember that I was on that rota and I did that job? And what will he say? I never knew. I never knew. It's not about what we know or even what we do, but it's about that encounter with God that we're invited into. And almost without exception, all of these moments after the resurrection basically ask this one question: have you met him? Have you met him? That's the only thing it seems like the scriptures are really engaged in, is that this risen Jesus needs to be met, needs to be engaged with. Have you met him? Jesus, his presence for our hiding and his peace for our fear. He stood among them and said, peace be with you. It was that shalom word from the Old Testament, an all-encompassing peace. The problem with our worldly view of peace is that we think about peace being the absence of something. So I will be at peace when there is the absence of war. There will be peace in our home when there's the absence of us fighting each other. A parent longs for peace when there is the absence of children, noise, deadlines, washing, clearing up, doing. I just want 5 minutes, said the elephant. Just give me 5 minutes. Peace. As if peace ultimately is the absence of certain things. But the Bible talks about peace in completely the opposite way. The Bible talks about peace not being the absence of war or trouble, but peace rather is the gift of assurance, confidence, and rootedness even in the midst of the trouble. Because it was only a few days earlier, Jesus said to his disciples just before the crucifixion, in this world you will have, not very encouraging really, but take heart, I've overcome the world. And so most of the time in our human experience, we're trying to get away from the things that we think are responsible for our lack of peace. Would you agree? So I will be more peaceful once I've got that job done. I will be more peaceful once that situation is sorted out. I will be more peaceful once that is resolved. And yet what we're taught by the scriptures to understand is that peace ultimately is not to do with the circumstances. And yet we believe it is. Sometimes you will say to someone, how are you? And they will say, I'm okay under the circumstances. In other words, our well-being is locked into what's going on around us. Those disciples, let's be clear, were in a mess. They'd signed up to a movement that was going to get them all killed. They really were in trouble. But Jesus says you can have peace in the midst of the trouble. It's a gift. Which is why Paul wrote, again, later on in the scriptures, he wrote about this peace that the world doesn't understand. And the peace of God which transcends, which is bigger, which overcomes all understanding. A peace that makes no sense if you think that peace is about the sum of your circumstances. And I think the reason that a lot of us don't live in a sense of peace and contentment is that we spend all our posture, all our effort trying to get all the ducks in a row. And ducks just swim off. And we think, if only I can get my ducks in a row, then eventually when I get them all in a row, I'll somehow feel at peace. And by the time you got the last one in the row, the first little one scurried off again. Actually, there's something deeper that causes the panic. Imagine getting all your ducks in a row and still not feeling at peace inside. That's the illusion. that peace comes from getting it all sorted. So no, Jesus says in the you'll have trouble. These disciples are in trouble, quite literally. They're going to have to go out in a few days' time into a world that's going to hound them down and persecute them and ultimately kill them for following this Jesus movement. But Jesus says, I'm giving you my peace that is bigger and better, that transcends, that overcomes what the world can give. And so you get this image that peace isn't so much just holding on until the storm passes. But peace is knowing that your house is so firm or your foundation so solid that the storm can keep blowing, but you know all is well. You know, there are some trees in the park, when the storm comes, they're in trouble, aren't they? And there are other trees that go, hey, bring it on, I'm still here. That's the peace that Jesus talks about. Bring it on, I'm still here. Because I'm rooted in Jesus, the one who is alive again. So he brings to those disciples this incredible gift of peace in the midst of their fear. Presence for our hiding and peace for our fear. And of course, purpose for our living. As the Father has sent me, so now I'm sending you. Every true encounter with the living God ends up with people being sent. That's a theme that goes right through the Bible. So it's not surprising here that in this crucial moment when Jesus shows up, there's a conversation about being sent. When Moses met God at the burning bush, he ends up being sent. When Isaiah meets God in the temple, he ends up being sent. When Nehemiah turns to prayer because he's distressed by the state of his people and the city, he ends up being sent. You can't encounter God without coming away with a real sense of purpose. And he gives us power, of course, for our sending. And this point about being sent is that the movement is always out, isn't it? The stream that goes out, the stream that went out from the temple, the river that goes out from the city of God. It's as we meet him that we capture this incredible sense of being able to represent him. And our ability to represent him, I think, is directly related not so much to how much we know about him, but how much we encounter him. Does that make sense? Because when Moses encountered God, he saw God face to face, and he came down, he said, kind of, there's this weird glow on you, mate. It's like you've been doing your face. And as we encounter God, our sense of sentness to the people around us exponentially increases. As we encounter Jesus, we realize that we are sent to our families, to our friends, to our workplaces, to our homes. Poor old Thomas. If I keep my head this way, it's all right, isn't it? You missed it. How many of you feel a bit like Thomas? If something good's going to happen, you're likely to miss it. Beware about missing church on a Sunday. Can you imagine? I've been coming for 35 years and then only went on holiday. Poor Thomas, he misses it. And I think we can relate to him because so often it feels like, well, that would be me. I'm the one that misses things. I'm the one that's on the outside. It all comes together for the others, but not me. Everyone else gets the blessing, but I don't. Blah, 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 blah. Somebody else all of the time. And so he misses it. And I think what's beautiful about these verses is that they don't in any way kind of condemn him or shame him or scold him. Jesus comes back for Thomas. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Jesus comes back for Thomas. Jesus is absolutely certain he doesn't want you to miss out. And he comes back for Thomas. And I think to Thomas's credit, and we always kind of talk about him as doubting Thomas, which is just a way of pretending none of us have got any doubts. Look at him, doubter. I'm not like him. That we forget what he actually did. And what he actually did was to say, I'm not prepared to live my life based on a second-hand story. Think about that for a minute. I don't want to spend my life based on someone else's testimony. I want to experience it for myself. That's not a bad thing, is it? Actually, he said, no, I want what you've got. If we've seen him, if he's really alive, then I need that too. He's uncovering something that's real about our humanity, that we can't spend our lives living off someone else's faith or someone else's story. All credit to the guy, I think, because I'm prepared. Is it just when I'm standing here? Why didn't you all say that earlier? You're all going, oh, what a muppet. Why didn't he stand somewhere else? And it's, thanks ever so much. It'd be nice to feel like we're in it together. Just rearrange the furniture here. But think about those moments, though, where we're tempted to live off someone else's experience. We do that, I think, more often than perhaps we care to admit. Often we will reach for a sermon, a video, or a testimony, and we live off someone else's faith. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? If I was to say to you, go and talk to someone about how great God is, would you tell someone else's story rather than your own? So I can tell this wonderful story about this guy that I met and God did something amazing in his life and whatever. Or I can tell you about that story I read in that book. And none of those things are wrong or bad, but we need our own story, people. This is what God's done for me. Thomas needed his own story, and so he went for it. And he hung around long enough for God to come back and meet him, for Jesus to come back and meet him. And Jesus wants to give us all our own stories. And this really important, if you think about this principle in all areas of life, think about it in parenting. In parenting, I mean, it's exhausting, isn't it? And it's, you know, overwhelming so often. And sometimes we're really happy to settle for our children being compliant. At least we got them into church. At least we got them through the quiet time. At least they read their Bible this month, this year, this decade. At least they listened to a worship song. And we go for compliance. We want them to comply. All we're doing is helping them live off our faith, not find their own. We don't want our kids to be compliant. We want them to be captivated. Our kids need their own story. And it struck me how easy it is in our parenting to lean into the compliance. I just want them to do the right thing. And actually, that just inoculates them from meeting the real Jesus in the real way. And they end up living off our faith. And then, of course, it comes to that moment of challenge or that moment of decision. They grow up, they move away, or they meet some friends that aren't like them, etc., etc., etc. And they haven't got the rootedness because they haven't got their own story. And so Thomas teaches us something really important about the reality that we need to be those people who are sent in the Holy Spirit's power. And I think we can find ourselves so easily stuck in the midweek. Thomas needed to wait a week before he had his own story. And maybe you feel today like you've waited a long time for your own story. Maybe this is your moment. Maybe this is your moment. Or maybe you've become aware, just as I've been talking, that you've been living off someone else's story. It's the other person in your house or family, the other people around you, or something that happened in your own life, but now it was a long time ago. It sometimes bothers me when I need to tell a story about my own experience, and I realize that I need to tell a story about my own experience because that's what helps disciple people, but the story that I'm reaching for is too far away. You with me? It's like, this story's a bit old now. And it's not that it's a bad story, it's just that why isn't there a current one? You with me? And so Thomas goes, I need my own story. I need my own story. I need to see what you've seen. And we go, oh, you doubter? I mean, who else of those disciples was full of faith until they'd met Jesus? Hey, none of them. He wasn't really a doubter. He just needed his story in the same way that we do. And I guess my prayer for us this morning, the main thread that comes out of all of this, is that we all need our own story about really meeting him. I don't mean learning about him. I mean that encounter stuff, that visceral stuff, when we know that we've met him in the core of our being, when we've encountered him and everything changes. So let's be quiet for a moment. And I just want you to reflect with me on the journey that we've just gone through about the way that we are given the gift of his presence, the gift of his peace, the gift of his purpose. But that gift all comes packaged in meeting him. Jesus didn't come back and give us a theology of the resurrection. And we'll see that that's really important. Over these next few weeks, we'll see that that matters. But first and foremost, his landing point, his kicking off point was, I'm just giving you myself. I just want you to meet me, to encounter me, to experience me, to know me. And so I want to thank you this morning that for every moment I'm like a Thomas and I'm reaching for someone else's story or I'm reaching for yesterday's story. You're wanting to offer me my own story, my own reality. And so I recognize that perhaps that's where I've been hiding. I'm not sure that I've got my own story. I'm not sure that I've got my own reality. And my heart's locked away. I invite you, Jesus, to come through the locked places of my heart today. We sometimes think about those verses at the end of the scriptures about Jesus knocking on the door and whoever opens the door, he'll come in. That was spoken to Christians. It wasn't an evangelistic message for those that didn't know him. It was to Christians. Because above all else, he says, I want to know you. I want to meet you. I want you to encounter me. I want it to be experiential. All that we experience in this life is not theoretical, it's our experience. And so we need an experiential response from God. And he gives that to us in the power of the resurrection. I want you just to think about what your posture is. Maybe when you sit with God in the mornings, when you read the scriptures, when you come to church, when you go about your daily life, when you wrestle with a challenge, it's super easy. It's so part of our conditioning to reach for an intellectual answer. These are 5 things I need to know about fear. These are 7 things I need to know about grief. These are 4 things I need to know about trauma. And it doesn't change us. It doesn't touch us. We can study peace and not know it. We can study God and not experience Him. We can know the knowledge of the Scriptures, but not the one to whom they point. Help me to hunger like David. And he talked about it in a way you have to hunger after it, to pant after it, to yearn after it. Help me to yearn after it like David. My soul longs for you. As Jeremiah would say, in a dark land, if you search me, you'll find me. If you search me with all of your heart. So help me to lay down my presuppositions, lay down my propositions, to lay down all those frameworks of knowledge that are so good, but have become an idol. They've become a substitute for meeting you. And so I lay it all down. Your grace is enough, more than I need. Jesus. Let's worship Him together.